Will everyone in the Senate please, in the galleries, please rise for prayer by Senator Rowden and remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
Father, we pause today to give thanks to you for your goodness and your grace. We are humbled by the opportunity to serve the people of this great state, but even more, we are humbled that we have the opportunity to be called your children. Today, we are saddened by the news from Arlington, Virginia, of senseless violence against Congressman Scalise and the others involved in this horrific incident. Our hearts are broken as we confront this startling new reality of rhetoric-driven hate and disrespect of our political opponents. In this chamber, as Republicans and Democrats in the Missouri Senate, may we lead the effort to push back against this extremism, to push back against the idea that if we disagree with someone politically, we are mortal enemies, and to work with diligence to restore civility and respect in our political discourse. May we find our example of how to lead in the way that you led and in the way that you loved, driven by compassion, motivated by truth, and committed to serve the most vulnerable among us with love. As we begin our debate today, we stand on the promise found in the 41st chapter of Isaiah, where it says, "Do not fear, for I am with you. Do not anxiously look about you, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. Surely I will help you. Surely I will uphold you with my righteous right hand." Thank you for your promises and for your truth. They are our hope and will be our guide as we do the work of the people this evening. We ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Madam Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Brown, Chappelle-Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dixon, Igel, Emery, Hageman, Holzman, Hoskins, Hummel, Kehoe, Koenig, Kraus, Leibler, Munslinger, Nasheed, Onder, Richard, Riddle, Rizzo, Romine, Rowden, Sater, Schoff, Schatz, Shoup, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson, Whelan.
A quorum being present, the Senate is in session. Madam Secretary, read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, first regular session, second extra session, second day, Tuesday, June 13th, 2017.
Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
The Senator from Cole has moved that the further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read. Is any senator desiring to be heard? Senator from Cole, you recognize close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
Those opinion of the motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary, say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. David Carson, for the benefit of the body, David Carson from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Summer Ballantyne from the Associated Press, Elizabeth Dusenberg from KMIZ, Kara Sicato and Nadia Halgreen from ABC News, and Kermit Miller with KRCG-TV have been granted permission to take photos and videos in the Senate chamber today.
Introduction of guests. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances. Resolutions. Concurrent resolutions. Introduction of bills. The senator from the 14th will reason your eyes.
I have a bill.
Send the bill forward. Madam Secretary, read the bill.
Senate Bill Number 8, offered by Senator Chappelle Nadal, an act relating to the investment policies of public entities.
Senator, you care to explain your bill?
Yes, I do. Mr. President, this is the legislation that I filed earlier this year that divests any interest that we have in our pensions in Russia. I think, especially with the news that we had today outside of the devastating news in Alexandria, but there was an announcement that there is an ongoing investigation of obstruction of our president. I think it's very important that we move ahead and make sure that we divest any interests that the state or any small jurisdictions may have in Russia. And that's the right thing to do. Thank you, Mr. President.
Introduction of bills. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, Senate go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection. I'd ask you to call the calendar.
We're on the order of business, Senate bills for perfection. Senate bill number 5. Senator from the 15th.
I move that Senate Bill 5 be taken up for perfection.
The senator from the 15th moves that Senate Bill number 5 be taken up for perfection. It's made the opinion that the motion shall prevail. Say aye. Those contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from the 15th.
Mr. President, I now move that Senate Bill 5 be declared perfected, ordered, and printed.
The senator from 15th moves that Senate Bill number 5 be declared perfect and ordered printed. Does the senator care to explain the bill?
I have a substitute. It has been distributed, and I ask for a waiver of its reading.
We just ask the senator. Send the sub forward.
And I move for its adoption.
And hearing no objections, the reading be waived. And the senator moves the adoption. You care to explain the substitute?
Yes. So what we have is we start off with a base of what was passed out of the Senate committee, and there was numerous changes to the part dealing with fetal tissue remains. We changed on page 7. It has just a representative sample of the tissue. It's changed to 5 days. And then on the gross examination, if it doesn't follow through, then they have to do a microscopic examination. And then if there's discrepancies in those reports, the department would have to inquire of the abortion facility. So at the end of that provision in the bill that came out of the committee, we had not less than a 1-year penalty. That was taken out and changed to subject to the provisions of Chapter 197 regarding license and suspension. We had some tweaks to the AG language, basically required 10 days notification to the local prosecuting attorney before the AG could step in. And then we added in, that was not in the substitute, the regulations and allowing the department to separately promulgate rules for the regulation of an abortion facility, which was originally in Senate Bill 1, but was not in the substitute that was passed out of committee. And I think that pretty much covers what's in the substitute. Mr. President, if I can inquire the senator from the second.
Senator from the second, do you yield for an inquiry? You do not? You do. Proceed.
So would you like to go over some of the changes?
Yeah, I think we have some changes. And, you know, I was approached. You know, what's interesting is you were ready to go, Senator, I understand, at about 9 o'clock this morning with this bill. There were negotiations all day long. And about an hour ago, maybe an hour and a half, I was approached with something that looked like the Senate committee substitute from yesterday with the abortion facility regulatory language added back in. Now, the reason that's very critical is that Judge Howard Sachs on May 5th issued a final ruling on an injunction, essentially striking down Missouri's ambulatory surgery law that dated back to 1986, and then substantially modified, many of you remember, in 2005, strengthened. And Judge Sachs, an unelected federal judge with a stroke of a pen, struck down this common sense health and safety regulation that protected Missouri women for all these years. In fact, you know, it's ironic that in the late 80s, Judith Whitcomb, the founder of Reproductive Health Services, actually worked with pro-lifers and with the Department of Health to promulgate the regs that I think are substantially the same as what Judge Sachs is striking down right now. So we need to go, we need this special session. Some have questioned the need for a special session because a federal judge thrust it upon us. Because otherwise, women are in a regulatory desert. We need to get back here and propose common sense health and safety regulations for Missouri women. So Senate Bill 1, which I wrote and filed, was a compilation of your own AG enforcement language. I know there, and there have been some compromises on that language. The senator from Cape Girardeau's Sanctuary City language to protect pregnancy care centers, which are under attack in this state right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably ridiculous to try to force a church or a pregnancy resource center to hire someone who might be pro-choice.
That's precisely right. And that is the precise intent of Board Bill 203, as it's been called, passed by some pretty radical politicians in the city of St. Louis. That is, by the way, a National Abortion Rights Action League national initiative. It's my understanding that there are similar ordinances in Washington, D.C. and in Boston right now. So pregnancy care centers are under attack, and we need to protect them. But getting back, so Senate Bill 1, I worked on, wrote with the help of Senate Research and filed Senate Bill 1. And that would take care of really, I believe, every issue and also addresses every element of the governor's call for the special session. What was passed out of committee last night was a scaled-down version. The absolutely critical piece that it was missing was the piece that would allow, since we can no longer regulate abortion clinics.
Right, we don't want to throw out all of our regulations that we currently have.
Absolutely, because this includes some very sense health and safety
regulations. Like infectious diseases.
Infection control. So infection control, for instance. I mean, one might wonder why your bill is 46 pages long. Much of that is adding, it's defining abortion facilities, since we can no longer regulate abortion clinics as ambulatory centers, care centers. We're defining abortion clinics we're creating this new definition of abortion facility, so that we can they can be subject to the common sense health and safety regulation that to protect Missouri women that the women have taken for granted for these last really 30 years. So you know this morning you had the full Senate, you know, Senate Bill 1, and you, I think you even distributed it, and you had this combination of last night's Senate committee sub with the regulatory language, the so-called Hellerstedt or Judge Sachs fix in it. And this afternoon, about an hour and a half ago, I was several of our colleagues came to see me, and they didn't have any language for me, but they said, you know, they basically outlined something very similar to what you had on our desks at 9 this morning. Again, the Senate committee substitute, which would be the pathology report accountability piece plus the sanctuary city piece. But when I actually received about 45 minutes or so ago this version, and I assume you just presented it, you sent forward 05F, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
So if you page 7, there are significant changes to the tissue.
There are some significant changes to that, and you know, really, and again, I don't know the research number you had this morning, but your bill from this morning was much better. And I think it was, I mean, I think there are members who, on the floor, who might have some changes to make the bill better, but I think that was very good. This, as it is right here, is really unacceptable, and I really think what I would like Senate Research to do is to draft my Senate Bill 1 as filed and draft it to this, because I'm going to offer an amendment, and I want to do an amendment to the amendment, and that way we can discuss Senate Bill 1. And then at some point, if we get to a place where we could compromise, where people are reasonable, I can always pull Pat Senate Bill 1. But I have to tell you, there are a number of members here who very strongly feel that the full Senate Bill 1 language is the way to go. And I think maybe at some point we just need to start having some votes and let the will of the body prevail. But I think this is but let's talk about here what's unacceptable, because I really think that you have really, Senator, you have really worked so hard all day long. You have tried your best to negotiate with our colleagues. There were a couple of colleagues. I might inquire of them a little bit later on. I really asked myself, you know, since after all I was the author of this bill, don't you want to talk to me? And they didn't. I'm going to ask them why.
So if you go to page 7, line 18.
Yeah. So I think
the first
problem with the bill is on page 7, line 18, and again, this, you know, some of this language was found in Senate Bill 67, which I filed in the regular session. And this is scaled back to really only address some very, examples of gross negligence that the Senate Sanctity of Life Committee, and I believe at the time you sat on the House Sanctity of Life Committee.
I did.
Some really examples that I think would constitute gross malpractice in any other area. And what we found is that many, 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 many pathology reports, and right now remember that that pathology reports are required by Missouri law that the abortion clinic has to submit tissue to the pathology lab, and then an exam gets done, and then the report gets sent to the department and back to the clinic. And so what we found is that many, many, many of those reports said no fetal tissue identified. Now, you and I have discussed this, Senator. If you went in to have your gallbladder removed,
there is no evidence that there was a gallbladder there.
And the pathology report came back no gallbladder.
That would be major problems for the doctor and the patient.
It would be major problems. The pathology lab would call your doctor right away. Your doctor would call you right away, get you back in the office to see what was wrong. But report after report after report, in fact, the majority of reports before 9 weeks gestation did say no fetal tissue identified. And there were even, I believe, half a dozen, I believe it was 7 pathology reports, I believe it was after 12 or 14 weeks, that said no fetal parts identified. So bottom line is that And so in the case, so why should my bill in regular session, my Senate Bill 1, and also the Senate Committee substitute passed out last night said all tissue removed at the time of the abortion shall be submitted, all tissue. And the change was a representative sample. And now, you know, I hate to be graphic here, but if in the case of an abortion and the pathologist got a torso, two arms and two legs, and he knew he was supposed to be receiving all tissue, he would immediately call the surgeon and say, there's a problem here. You have retained products of conception. You better get that get your patient in right away and see what's going on. Whereas if it's just a representative sample, he doesn't know what the surgeon decided to send. So this is a huge health and safety issue. The other thing, the next change was
line 21.
The next in line 19, it said shall be submitted within. The Senate Committee substitute said 72 hours. Within 72 hours. Now, even 72 hours is a little bit lax, but changing to 5 business days, in the case, if there is no fetal tissue because it's we have a missed ectopic pregnancy, in 5 days, 5 business days, which could be 7 days, that patient could be dead. So I think, again, If someone doesn't like describing in terms of 72 hours because of weekends, we could say two business days. You know, that would probably be okay. And then 21 if indicated. So again, the reason many of these early pathology reports don't show tissue is because they're just not looking at it at the tissue under a microscope. And if they did look under a microscope, which adds a trivial amount. We actually, in response to the Chris Koster report.
$11 to 11.
Adds
11.
$7.
Plus 11.
$11.
So
the data I've seen, abortions cost somewhere between $550 and $1,500 are the numbers I've seen. So
it's a fraction.
The addition of a tiny amount, you have a great margin of safety. Also, you can't pick up a cancer or a molar pregnancy without microscopic examination. So these changes, I mean, again, these changes are these problems, these changes that were sprung upon you and me at the 11th hour, they're a big health and safety problem. These things don't change, and I need to go with Senate Bill 1 as I filed it on Monday. The next page, 8, we have the language regarding the inspections of the facility in the case of these discrepancies. It's been weakened considerably, and really we need the Senate Bill 1 language back there. There were some changes that I agreed would be acceptable, but if you read lines 8 through 11, after such inquiry, if the hospital or abortion facility has not satisfactorily responded to such inquiry and the department finds that the abortion facility or hospital where the abortion was performed or induced was not in compliance with the provisions of the section, the department shall consider such noncompliance a deficiency, and so on. Now, one easy way to fix it would be to put an or instead of an and there, but think about that.
Right.
So the facility does not respond in a satisfactory way, and the department has to find a non-compliance. So if they don't provide the documentation the department asks, they won't have the documentation of the non-compliance. So if you don't cooperate, you kind of get off scot-free with this language. And I wonder, I hope that wasn't the intent. Maybe it was just sloppy drafting.
It's something that I didn't really notice.
Yeah, because
at first
I can't imagine as people were, you know, what about this, what about this? I think what you probably said is, hey, show me the language and I'll read the language. And so that's a problem there. What else did you and I find as we went through here?
I think
those were some of the main things. You know, let me go through my list. You know, and again, I think there really are some, you know, again, I do think that the complication report part of Senate Bill 1 was very important. This was the part where facilities, right now facilities that do chemical abortions are regulated as ambulatory surgery centers. So anything we do will be a significant deregulation compared to the present state of the law. But if Judge Sachs, based on Heller, Whole Women's Health versus Heller,
yeah, we're not stuff, really like moving the bar here.
Yeah. So what the complication plan section of the language would do, which of course will be added back in Senate Bill 1, which is really the bill that I think we need to pass anyway. And again, a number of members I've talked to feel the same way. That plan would, here we go. In the case of chemical abortion drugs with significant complication rates, it would basically give the department the authority to regulate those chemical abortions and abortion facilities, and require that there be a complication plan. Let me read to you the FDA-approved label for this drug.
RU486?
So at present, there is only one FDA-approved abortion drug, and this is known as RU486, also known as the trade name Mifeprex. And so this is a black box warning. So I'm sure the senator from Barrie, being a pharmacist, and probably many other members of this body know what a black box warning means. A black box warning means something significantly, there's a significant problem with the drug that you've really got to watch out for. Doesn't necessarily mean you should never prescribe the drug, but so in this case, the black box warning, and again, we want what the department does to be evidence-based to protect the health and safety of women. And again, we're substantially deregulating when we deregulate from ambulatory surgery center down to, well, right now we have a regulatory desert. Anything the Department of Health and Senior Services does in the area of abortion is subject to the abortion clinic running back to the federal judge and saying, you can't do this. So here's the FDA-approved black box. Warning, serious and sometimes fatal infections or bleeding. Serious and sometimes fatal infections and bleeding occur very rarely following spontaneous surgical and medical abortions, including following Mifeprex. A typical presentation of infection, patients with serious bacterial infections and sepsis can present without fever, bacteremia, or significant findings on pelvic examination. A high index of suspicion is needed to rule out serious infections. Bleeding, prolonged heavy bleeding, may be a sign of incomplete abortion, or other complications and prompt medical or surgical intervention may be needed. Mifeprex is only available through a restricted program called the Mifeprex RMS program. Before prescribing Mifeprex, inform the patient about these risks, ensure the patient knows whom to call and what to do if she experiences sustained fever, severe abdominal pain, heavy prolonged bleeding, or malaise acting more than 24 hours. But most importantly, advise the patient to take the medication guide with her if she visits an emergency room or another healthcare provider who did not prescribe Mifeprex, so that the provider knows that she is undergoing a medical abortion. The key to this section, which again is not right now on your floor sub, is really the requirement that complication plans be approved by the department so that women know what to do, where to go, what facility to go to, who to call if there's a complication of medication abortions. Because, you know, the original rate of needing surgical interventions after Mifeprex, after RU486, was 7.9%. Now, the 2016 revised labels shows a 2.6% rate of need for surgery in U.S. trials, and 3.8% in non-U.S. trials. So there's a comment about the high failure rate as well. So I really think that's an advantage of going with Senate Bill 1 as opposed to this. The other issue is this issue of informed consent. You know, from 1979 until 2010, Missouri law required doctors, the doctor performing the abortion or the
referring, has to actually do the informed consent. And now anybody can just hand it out as a little pamphlet.
Now there's this category of quote, qualified healthcare personnel, which not only would include a doctor, a registered nurse, or a licensed practical nurse, but it would also include a psychologist, a clinical social worker, and a couple of other categories of individuals. I think in any surgery we have, we expect to meet our doctor, we expect that doctor to explain to us the risks and benefits and alternatives of those procedures. That is the standard of care of any other area in medicine. So really, as part of our effort to institute common sense health and safety standards to protect Missouri women, I really believe that that reinstating that requirement that the physician himself or herself do the informed consent, not on all the aspects of informed consent mandated by our 2010 law, but on the medical clinical aspects, that should be between, you know, the pro-choice side often says an abortion decision should be between a woman and her doctor. Well, how can a woman make an informed choice if she's not met her doctor, had a chance to ask questions? That's just standard of care in so many areas. So I think that's another part of SB1 that I think is really a very valuable piece. I think we've talked about some of the problems with this so-called compromise that was. That I only had a chance to CEO maybe in my, again my, now it's about an hour ago, but I think rather than go and go back and kind of change all the little stuff that's in your bill, I want to go back to something that fully covers the governor's call. That will protect pregnancy care centers and the good work they do. Pregnancy care centers, I mean, as you know, centers, they, in fact, I think you maybe have even, you know, you and your lovely wife have been involved in pregnancy care centers over the years. I know Allison and I have.
Sure.
I know the senator from Green, I know he and his wife have. They provide food and shelter and clothing. They help women get prenatal care. They help them get transportation to doctor's appointments. They help them find jobs. And they're under attack by these radical politicians in the city of St. Louis who are following marching orders from a radical national group called NARAL. We need to protect pregnancy care centers, but we need to do more than that. We need to protect...
just doing that doesn't go far enough.
Yeah, we need to protect the health and safety of Missouri women, and we need to propose and reinstitute common sense regulations to again give the Department of Health to do what they've done since 1979, which is to protect the health and safety of women. What, again, a strong abortion advocate in the late 1980s agreed was valuable. And now they just want a regulatory desert where they can just do what they want. I suppose to minimize costs. I don't know what the reason for it is, but I do think that we need common sense health and safety regulations. So you know, again, I think. I think we want to. Of course, it's your inquiry, Senator, and. I think at some point, though, I think we will, you know, I don't know if you want to inquire of other senators. I'd be happy to talk to you. Would you want to go through all the provisions of the bill and of Senate Bill 1?
I think we went through all the changes from what came out of committee.
I think we went through some of the changes that have occurred since committee. Again, the committee substitute... You know, the main issue I had with it is that it did not restore the regulatory, you know, the regulatory aspects of did not restore the authority of the Department of Health and Senior Services that it's always had under our ambulatory
right.
Surgery center statutes. It did not restore that authority to the Department of Health to regulate safety standards in Missouri clinics, health and safety of women.
All right.
So, yeah. No, if you'd like to inquire of someone else, or if you're done with your inquiry.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you a lot, Senator.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Senator.
Senator from the 15th, will raise your eyes.
Fire the Senator from Barton.
Senator from Barton, yield.
I do.
Proceed.
Thank you. Good evening, Senator.
Good evening. How's it going?
Good.
We went through some of the changes that is in the sub versus what was passed out of committee. I didn't know if you had any particular comments you might want to add.
Well, I can't say I'm pleased with everything that was left out of the committee substitute. I'm glad for the things that are on the floor substitute, and I'm glad for the things that are back in on the floor substitute. I think it's would have been ridiculous in terms of putting women at risk if we didn't have any of the considerable inspections and regulations on those clinics that we would typically have in any surgical situation. I was especially concerned after looking at some of the review that the interim committee, the Senate's interim committee on abortion practices, and particularly Planned Parenthood, I was just kind of reviewing some of that, and some of the things in here are really just remind us of how significant those regulations and inspections are. They also highlight some of the reasons for some of the other things that didn't survive so far, unless the senator from the Second Amendment actually is adopted. But once we see what it is, but it certainly helps us understand why the things were in the governor's call that were in the governor's call. It helps us understand why each of those provisions was there in terms of trying to address real problems in terms of threats to women.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely real problems. I mean, in the report that we saw when dealing with the pathology reports from the department, I mean, in many, many cases, it said there was no products of conception.
Right.
I mean, this would be like gross negligence. I mean, you potentially did an abortion, and there's no evidence that an abortion was ever taking place. I mean, what would happen if, you know, a doctor came and took your gallbladder out, and then, you know, you sent it to a pathologist, and they said, oh, there's actually no evidence that the gallbladder was actually removed.
Sure.
I mean, there'd be serious consequences.
Now, let's say the cancer came back, and I expect there would be a malpractice lawsuit filed very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, the patient could be dead.
Yeah.
Or survive. Or have to go back in there and...
Right. Yeah, and I think that's one of the things. If you look at some of the Planned Parenthood review statement, one of the things, Planned Parenthood's own internal files reveal a shocking callousness towards vulnerable young women who seek their services. In fact, the procedures outlined in the materials reviewed may very well constitute outright medical malpractice. Those were some of the things that were observed, and that's just simply by reviewing internal
documents. If this was anywhere else in the medical field, we wouldn't think twice. We would say, that is bad, it is unacceptable.
That's right.
And for some reason, in this case, we just want to turn our heads and ignore it.
Right. There would be outrage if we wanted to treat hospitals this way.
Right.
Say, you know, you don't really have to be sure that what you said you did actually happened. You don't really have to be subject to inspections and to certain levels of cleanliness and disease control. We're okay with that. And if anything goes wrong, why, maybe you can fix it. And then, of course, with some of the things that were struck down by the judge's opinion. They don't even really have to report the things that have gone wrong. And of course, that's something hopefully we'll see some greater enforcement of with the new administration and the new DHSS director, I'm hoping that we're seeing going to see much more effectiveness on
some
there.
Of these ambulance or 911 calls, like if you compare that to like a colonoscopy center,
right,
they're substantially less than what you might see at the Planned Parenthood. I mean, 23 hemorrhages. I mean, these are sometimes these are serious events.
Right. Right. And yeah, some of the instructions that were found when the committee examined the actual internal documents where the Planned Parenthood employees were being trained and instructed were just atrocious. I mean, they were being told things like, if you do have an emergency, be sure and inform when you call the emergency in, the 911 call, be sure and inform them not to use lights and siren. They were telling patients, if you discharge clots as large as a lemon, we're talking about significant bleeding at that point, don't call the hospital, call us. These are the kind of things that were being, that were in their internal documents instructing their employees. And then we hear defense of them saying, well, these aren't really events. You know, these really aren't, we don't see a problem with this. We don't know for sure that this is related to an abortion. But you get into the documents and you find out there's numerous measures that they're taking to make sure that we don't know how many problems they're having with abortions.
And when we're talking about inspections, you know, we have inspections annually. If we look at other areas in law, what do you find? Do you think annual inspections is something that we typically find when dealing with maybe restaurants or any numerous items that are probably less risky than something like an abortion?
If you're a butcher.
All right. So yeah, if you're not even.
if you're just processing meat, if you're processing food, you have those kinds of inspections. And yet we're saying that in a surgical situation, you don't have to have those same kind of inspections.
Like what about radiology equipment? Yeah. I mean, I think those have to be inspected. At least, I don't know the exact.
I think it's annually. I don't know that for sure. I've heard the inspection rate on those, but I can't confirm absolutely because I don't
remember. Well, you probably make a pretty lengthy
list. Talk to radiologists, yeah. That, right. They
so,
have
I mean,
to be,
it's...
Because they've got to be on target because they don't want to miss something or they don't want to identify something that is not
actually,
there.
Actually, I'm in construction.
Right.
And I have, last week I had to get a permit. You know what they had to do? When we're building whatever we're building, they had to come out and do a pre-inspection. Then they had to come in and do an inspection after we were completed.
Yeah.
So that's two inspections
right.
in a matter of weeks.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
We're not even asking for that.
No, I know. And that's the reason I think, not everyone is completely satisfied with the language that's in your floor substitute because of some of that. Because some of it is saying, but why would we drop our concern over a surgical procedure in one arena where we wouldn't in another? So one of the things that in the instructions that were examined in the Planned Parenthood offices, one form, complications as serious as cardiac arrest are discussed, but there's no reference made to calling 911. If they feel like they're experiencing 911, there's no recommendation.
That's pretty egregious.
One form, a patient seeking medical attention is told if they don't hear back from Planned Parenthood in 20 minutes, then call 911. There's example after example. It says if you're feeling worried and think you need to go to the emergency room, call us in big capital letters. Call us. There is no reference there to calling 911. There's a drawing of a lemon in one referring to the blood clots that size being a reason to call Planned Parenthood, but no reference to 911. And even though we know that these drug-induced abortions have a real risk of hemorrhaging. And multiple examples, where we have seen the hemorrhaging. And so these are the kind of things that drive you to something like Senate Bill 1. that says every one of these is necessary and one of these is important to the health of women, because we're seeing women's lives at risk here. There's some reference to the number of calls that come in regarding certain aspects, and yet there, even in those, it's not acknowledged how many deaths occur relative to just medical incidents. So we're talking about the kind of things that within these clinics where you are discouraging patients from even requiring proper care. Certainly not encouraging the medical professionals to provide that quality care. In one instruction, it says, if it becomes necessary to call 911, this is instruction to the staff. Staff is instructed to request no sirens be used by the ambulance. Staff is further instructed not to tell paramedics that the emergency call related to an abortion. They are instructed to only give general demographic information and a vague summary of the person's condition information, such as patient is in her 20s, bleeding but stable, quote, unquote. Staff is also told to keep EMS out of the procedure room unless necessary and use physical banner to shield patients being loaded into an ambulance from the field of picketers. Clearly the absence of a siren puts a patient at risk, because you're not going to be able to move as quickly through.
Yeah, Mr. Traffic. I'm going to cut off this inquiry, if that's okay.
Absolutely. Thank you, Senator. I appreciate you.
Yeah, I appreciate our discussion. It was a very good discussion. It needed to be said, so I really appreciate
Senator.
It.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator 15th.
If you can lay that bill on the table.
That will be laid on the table. Part, we'll do what?
On the informal
calendar, yes. The bill will be laid on the informal calendar. Senator from Cole.
Action, Senator, will go to the order of business of announcements.
Announcements. Senator from Andrew.
Mr. President, I have an announcement. The Republicans will caucus 10 minutes in the Senate lounge. Upon recess.
Senator Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move the Senate stand in recess until 8:15 p.m. this day.
The Senator Cole moves that the Senate stand in recess until 8:15 p.m. this day. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed no. The Senate is in recess.